Will People Still Be Reading Stephen King in 2068? By Bev Vincent. Bev Vincent is the author of several books about Stephen King's work, including The Dark Tower Companion and The Stephen King Illustrated Companion. He had been writing Stephen King News from the Dead Zone for Cemetery Dance magazine since 2001 and is currently providing historical context essays for Richard Schismar's Stephen King Revisited project. Follow him on Twitter at BevVincent or visit BevVincent.com. In late 1997, I had the opportunity to talk to Stephen King at length for the first time. We were driving around Bangor, and during the course of our conversation about authors we enjoyed, I mentioned an interview I'd encountered recently in which Jonathan Kellerman said he thought King would be read in schools in 50 years, the way Poe is read now. After a few seconds, King, who was driving, responded, "That's great, but you know what? In 50 years, I probably won't give a shit." A typical Kingian self-effacing response, in the same vein as his comment in the afterword of Different Seasons, that most of his novels have been plain fiction for plain folks, the literary equivalent of a Big Mac and a large fries from McDonald's. But as I approached this essay, that moment came back to me. 50 years is an interesting, albeit arbitrary, chunk of time. Long, but not too long. When our conversation took place, it was conceivable that I'd live to see whether Kellerman's prognostication came true. However, as it turns out, I don't need to survive to the ripe old age of 86 to find out if Kellerman was right. King is already being read in school, despite some concern at the middle and high school level about the suitability of his stories because of strong language and scenes of horrific violence. If you search for King's name in the context of high school, you'll mostly find articles about his books being challenged for removal from school libraries. Still, a number of high schools have King short stories listed as part of the curriculum, generally for honors English classes, and guides exist for teachers who want to integrate his stories into their syllabi. One of these guides, written before Kellerman's interview, A Teacher's Guide to Selected Horror Short Stories of Stephen King, from the anthologies Night Shift, Nightmares and Dreamscapes, and Skeleton Crew, while acknowledging the issues pertaining to content, argues that even reluctant readers will enjoy his work, which can be used as a springboard to the classic novelists of horror and suspense. That might seem like a backhanded compliment, but the fact is that King isn't yet a classic novelist. He's a producing author who is still finding new and interesting things to say. Classic status requires some distance, in much the same way the magnum opus does. In terms of popularity, he is a major contemporary author who has mastered the craft of creating horror and suspense stories, both genres with long historic and literary roots. Such writers as Charlotte Bronte, Emily Bronte, Mary Shelley, Bram Stoker, William Shakespeare, Edgar Allan Poe, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Herman Melville, Robert Louis Stevenson, Wilkie Collins, and Charles Dickens are just a few examples of classic writers who won similar popular acclaim in their day, the introduction to this guide states. Not bad company to keep. If you move beyond high school, to the more permissive and less cloistered world of university, not only will you find King stories in the syllabi, you'll find entire classes devoted to King and his works. Tony Magistrelli, whose name you may recognize and who also appears in this volume, held a class called The Films and Novels of Stephen King at the University of Vermont nearly 20 years ago. The University of North Carolina Wilmington has offered a graduate-level course on King's work, and Purdue University currently offers an upper-level class on King's short stories. Academic papers and PhD theses have been written about his work. Note from Stephen Spignesi. Bev is right about this. I myself taught a popular course at the University of New Haven called The New Gothic Horror of Stephen King. As early as the 1980s, literary critics believed King's work merited closer scrutiny than other popular fiction. Several were published as part of the Starmont Studies in Literary Criticism series, with contributions from Magistrelli, Michael R. Collings, and other critics. Biographies aside, over 100 books have been published about aspects of King's work. The discussion about King's longevity as a writer is not limited to the academic environment, despite the proclamations of self-appointed gatekeepers of the Western literary canon. Harold Bloom, in an introduction to a collection of essays devoted to King in the Modern Critical Views series, complained that he had suffered through his reading of various King works, and later derided the decision by the National Book Foundation in 2003 to present King with the Award for Distinguished Contribution to American Letters. Writers don't remain popular simply because they're part of a high school or university curriculum. King continues to be immensely popular. Hundreds and millions of copies of his 50-plus novels and collections are in print in English alone, and he has been translated into over 40 languages, from Albanian to Vietnamese. Hundreds of millions of copies. It's hard to conceptualize that many books. Let's try this experiment. If we assume the average volume is 2 inches thick, you could make a stack of his English language books that, if tipped over, would extend more than halfway around the planet. Those books aren't going to go away, even in the unlikely event that any go out of print, a concept that is becoming increasingly difficult to define in this era of modern publishing. And millions more of them are printed every year. According to Kevin Quigley in Chart of Darkness, King's books have reached the number one position on the New York Times bestseller list more than any other author in history, with well over 30 appearances in that slot. That represents a track record of loyal readership spanning multiple decades. His popularity is so unprecedented that the Times had to change its rules in 1996 when multiple installments of The Green Mile serialized novel took over the list simultaneously. Though it's difficult to look 50 years into the future in this fast-changing world, King has been publishing for that long already. His first professional sale was in 1967, and the novels and stories he wrote in the 1970s are still being read as avidly today as his most recent works. Elements from his books, and the films based upon them, have become cultural touchstones. "Here's Johnny" would have been an internet meme had there been memes and an internet to spread them when Kubrick's adaptation of The Shining came out. Celebrity stalkers are instantly compared to Annie Wilkes. Stories about scary dogs inevitably reference Cujo. Self-driving cars run amok will no doubt be compared to Christine. Coulrophobia has hit new levels in recent years thanks to Pennywise version 2.0. Let's take a stroll through King's earliest novels to explore whether they're still relevant today. Are contemporary teenagers cruel to each other? Our awareness of bullying and shaming is higher now than it was in 1974. In this day and age, would a man torment his family when subjected to the pressures of alcoholism and isolation? Certainly. Do people shoot up schools in 2018? Sadly, yes. Are we prone to eradication by a supervirus? Oh, yeah. Could an insane person take control of the U.S. government and launch a first nuclear strike? Don't get me started. The only difference is that if Greg Stilson used a baby to shield himself from an assassin today, his political prospects would probably survive the controversy. Supernatural novels like Salem's Lot are affected a bit by changes in technology. Small towns are no longer isolated as they were in the 1970s. It would be difficult to imagine that story in the modern era, with live streaming and Twitter. However, that doesn't negate the book's fundamental truths about life in rural America and the way people interact. And there's nothing wrong with considering King's second novel a period piece, in much the same way that we know that Dracula wouldn't play out the same way if it were set in the 21st century. In fact, one of the inspirations for Salem's Lot was a discussion about what would happen if Stoker's vampire showed up in New York City in the 1970s. Here's more evidence of the universality of King's novels, because that's what we're talking about after all. Stories and novels survive because something about them continues to be relevant. The smash hit movie of 2017 was Chapter 1 of It, which broke box office records one after the other. Here's an adaptation of a 30-year-old novel that still strikes a chord with viewers today. More to the point, the screenwriters moved the time frame of the story forward over 30 years, from 1958 to 1989, without having to change much about the story. Everything that was important in the original time frame was still meaningful in the later setting. Even a novel like Cell, which is heavily reliant upon technology that was current when it was written, but will probably seem as foreign to future readers as the oversized cell phones in the earliest episodes of The X-Files are to us now, contains an underlying truth. The notion that a foreign entity could hack our technology and turn it against us is perhaps even more frightening today than it was a dozen years ago. In addition to this high-concept description of the novel, it is propelled by a fundamental and universal idea, a father's drive to rescue his son. In 2017, we saw a resurgence in cinematic adaptations of King's novels. In part, this was inspired by the multitude of new venues for these adaptations, the rise of original content on pay services like Netflix and Hulu, and on premium cable channels like Spike TV and the Audience Network, means that the old schism between feature film and made-for-TV adaptation no longer exists. Netflix was willing to take a chance on a feature-length adaptation of Gerald's Game without having to deal with the messy details of distribution, for example, and Audience Network was able to create a brutally graphic adaptation of Mr. Mercedes without bowing to the demands of network standards and practices. However, none of these projects would have proceeded if the source material wasn't popular and relevant. Gerald's Game was a more than 20-year-old novel when Mike Flanagan adapted it, but the underlying story is as pertinent today as in the early 1990s. The fact that so many of King's books and stories have been adapted to film, and readapted and sequeled, will also increase his legacy. Movies, even bad ones, have a way of persisting. The Shawshank Redemption is already in heavy rotation on Turner Classic Movies, and regardless of your thoughts about the Kubrick adaptation of The Shining, it's a movie that is going to be watched for generations to come. This vast library of films and TV series is going to keep King's name in the common consciousness in much the same way that even now there is a cadre of King's fans who know his work primarily through its adaptations. Some of these fans go on to read the books and will continue to do so. King is different from most other authors in the way he has become a recognizable figure. Thanks to his movie and TV cameos, television commercials, and countless televised interviews, King is a personality, as instantly recognizable as Agatha Christie, Edgar Allan Poe, Mark Twain, or Ernest Hemingway. The list of King's awards for individual works is long. In 2015, President Obama awarded King the National Medal of Arts, the highest award for artists given by the U.S. government, for his remarkable storytelling with his sharp analysis of human nature. Another indicator of popularity is parody. You don't lampoon something unless you expect people to recognize the reference. There have been numerous parodies of King's works, including on The Simpsons, over the years. Songs have been inspired by his novels and stories. Amateur filmmakers option his stories so they can showcase their skills. He has created such a vast, interlinked universe of characters and places that it is sometimes discussed with the same reverent tones used for Marvel and DC characters. The success of Stranger Things is, in large part, due to its unabashed homage to King's books from the 1980s. It's hard to imagine his reputation running out of steam anytime soon. King is not only a producer of popular works, he's also an avid consumer. He reads voraciously and across genres, and also enjoys films and TV series. For a number of years, he wrote about his passion for popular culture in a regular column in Entertainment Weekly, culminating in a series of Year's Best articles about books, movies, and television. His book reviews continue to appear in venues like the New York Times. His connection to contemporary culture means that he continues to keenly observe it, and it is that observation that provides fodder for his work. On occasion, there has been an eerie prescience to his fiction. The domestic terrorism seen at the end of Mr. Mercedes, for example, presaged similar events in recent years. Even when he's writing about things happening now, he's looking to the future. Just look at The Dead Zone. Just look. Since we can't peer into the future to see what 2068 will look like, let's perform the reverse experiment and turn our sights on the past. Five authors held the top position on the New York Times bestseller list during 1968. William Styron, Fletcher Nebel, John Updike, Arthur Haley, and Helen McInnes. How many do you recognize? How many are still being read today? Styron, author of The Confessions of Nat Turner, would go on to write Sophie's Choice and a number of other books, but he's hardly a household name. McInnes, author of The Salzburg Connection, wrote a number of subsequent novels, but her name is probably not well known outside the mystery genre. In 1968, Arthur Haley was in his heyday for Airport, and he wrote a number of bestsellers thereafter. People are probably more familiar with the spoof Airplane than with the Haley novel itself these days, but he's still fairly well known. I've never heard of Nebel. Vanished. But Updike's name will be known to just about everyone, and his 1968 novel, Couples, put him on the cover of Time magazine. Here are some other authors who released new books in 1968, whose name will be familiar to most readers. Isaac Asimov, Agatha Christie, Arthur C. Clarke, August Derleth, Philip K. Dick, John Irving, John D. MacDonald, John le Carré, Norman Mailer, Alice Munro, Mordecai Rickler, Robert Silverberg, Jack Vance, Gore Vidal, and John Wyndham. A couple of them are still publishing today. What does this tell us? Nothing specific about King, but the fact that so many authors from 50 years ago are remembered and read today bodes well for King's legacy. Regardless of where you come down on the question of King's literary merit, is he more akin to Agatha Christie or Alice Munro, longevity is still very much a possibility half a century hence. What factors contribute to an author's work's endurance? Does it matter if an author is prolific? No. There are a number of classic novels that were either the only work by an author or part of a small output, whereas Dickens produced an impressive body of work. How much does it matter if an author is popular in his or her time? John Dixon Carr published a ton of books and gained a measure of acclaim, but few people recognize his name or the titles of any of his books today. Is popularity and accessibility contrary to literary merit? Some critics would have you think so, but Mark Twain was hugely popular in his time and is still being read today. Is King's use of common language and pervasive use of contemporary cultural references detrimental? That remains to be seen. Copies of his books, if published in 2068, might need to be annotated. But King would deny any charges that he uses common language and is, by his own admission, greatly interested in language. In the first foreword to On Writing, King recounts a conversation with Amy Tan in which the two authors lament the fact that no one ever asks them about language. They ask the DeLillos and the Updikes and the Styrons, but they don't ask popular novelists. He writes. That book, On Writing, may play a large part in King's literary legacy. Even people who do not regularly read King's fiction have lauded it as an exceptional writing guide. His thoughts on the craft of writing are timeless. People who have adapted King's work feel confident of his legacy. J.J. Abrams, executive producer of the Hulu series 11/22/63, and creator of the series Castle Rock, based on King's famous fictional town, says, "Time continues to prove that his books are far more than pop cultural phenomenons. He is increasingly and deservedly respected as one of the greatest authors this country will ever produce." What does King say about his legacy, other than, "I probably won't give a shit"? In 2006, he said that neither critics nor authors themselves have much to say about how their work will be regarded in the future. "In the end, after you're gone, the work finds its own level," he said. So long as he doesn't end up being treated like a sociological artifact, like a Halloween mask, he's content. He says, "Some of the books which everyone sneered at for being disposable, such as Agatha Christie, have actually survived the longest on the bookshelves." In response to a question about how he saw his place in the literary tradition of Poe, Stoker, and Lovecraft, King said, "I'm not one to think about legacy, but I would like it if people said of me, his writings faithfully reflected the America he lived in." He was more expansive when asked what people would say about him after he was gone. He says, "It would be nice if people said, he worked hard, he left a rich legacy of novels, and did the right things in the community." When asked if he thought people would be reading The Stand in 50 years, King replied, "That would really be nice. They might read The Shining. They might read Salem's Lot. I think horror novels and fantasy novels have a longer shelf life than other kinds of books. I think of big bestsellers from when I was a kid, like 7 Days in May and the novels of Irving Wallace. You get a blank look if you mention those names. That's what happens to most writers. People move on." I don't think there's any question that readers will still be scaring themselves silly and enjoying King's novels in 2068. The only question is, in what form will they be read? How prevalent will hard copy novels be in that mystical future era? What new technologies will have evolved that we can't imagine today? Whatever they are, I am confident that Stephen King's books will be available on them.